Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I am your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, it's a Major League Baseball edition of the program. The Major League Baseball season is a little over a week away. So we will we'll talk to Ben Ingram of the Atlanta Braves Radio Network. He's the pregame, postgame host on 680 The Fan. He's also a MLB Network correspondent. You can follow him at Ingram Radio on Twitter. That's I-N-G-R-A-M Radio. We also will talk about the Chicago Cubs, the National League Central, with Brett Taylor of Bleacher Nation. He covers the Cubs and also the Chicago Bears to some degree on the internet. You can follow him at Bleacher Nation. That's at Bleacher Nation on Twitter to get really comprehensive Chicago Cubs coverage. So we'll talk about the Braves. We'll talk about the Cubs. We'll talk about the Cardinals. We'll talk about Bryce Harper, the Nationals. There's a lot there, not just Braves and Cubs, but a little bit of a pretty in-depth perspective on those two teams as the season approaches. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. It's at Highway 6 West in Oxford, just next door to the Oxford Exxon. Right now, they've got the $3 meal deal featuring the Chipotle Cheese Crystal. You can spice it up at Crystal with the Chipotle Cheese Crystal, the Chipotle Cheese Loaded Fries, also the Red Hot Slushy that is made, as you might expect, with Red Hots. So if you want a little spice here in the month of March as we have finally turned to spring, even though it's still kind of chilly outside, Crystal is the place to go. And if you're not looking for spice, you just want a 24-pack of Crystals as you get ready to enjoy week number two of the NCAA tournament, you can do that as well. You can get a party pack of 24 Crystals there at the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and he will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's really that simple. It's right to the bottom line. You tell Corey what you're looking for. He sends you a quote. It's no haggling, no hassle. It's a great way to get to do your car buying experience. And then it's up to you, really. You can shop that quote around as much as you'd like. That's your prerogative. Or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our family of podcasts, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. Make the deal even better. At the end of your deal, say, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention any of our family of podcasts, obviously including the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden, and that's $500 off the bottom line on your deal at Clark Ford, 662-257-1900. We're also brought to you by Community Mortgage. Community Mortgage is located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's JLOWE, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. This podcast is also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Beer Garden listeners. It's a $500 savings, so call him today. And before we get to Ben Ingram, let me also tell you that the podcast is brought to you by Strategic Partners and Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here is why SPM is really good and really different from other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing is done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. And lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian is a partner in the firm. So give them a call and see just how great they are. Email Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, that's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. And now let's talk about the Atlanta Braves, the Nationals, the rest of the National League East with Ben Ingram of the Atlanta Braves Radio Network here on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. All right, Ben, thanks so much for the time. I know that it's probably starting to get to that restless slash exciting time of spring. I'll start here. I was talking to a friend who covers the Cubs who said yesterday the season should probably start right now. It feels like everyone's ready right now. And there's an extra 10 days. Do you concur with that? Is spring a week to 10 days too long?
Probably so. I think it's all about who you ask. But in my opinion, we've crossed that threshold for sure. We got down here on February the 13th, pitchers and catchers reported that day. And if you were to ask position players, if you were to ask the really, really gifted position players like Freddie Freeman, guys who are usually all-star caliber players, they'll say, man, give me a couple of weeks tops and I'll be ready to go. Defensively, those guys are fine. They just want to get their swing down. And for some of those guys, it might take a week, week and a half a game. So the reason that spring training is so long is for the pitchers. And we baby these pitchers more so now than ever. And we stretch them out and we let them have their schedule and their routine and they're very routine-oriented oriented individuals. And they want all the time they could possibly get to stretch out and get up to where they can go to six, seven innings to, at the end of spring training, and you can go into the regular season and hopefully go that far or further. But that's really the point. And I think from once you get to probably mid-March, most of the position players are saying, let's get back up north, let's deploy this thing for real. And the pitchers are thinking, we want as much time as possible.
The big news out of Braves camp as we tape this on Tuesday morning is Ronald Acuna, the 20-year-old future star. He's going to be a great player. Barring something weird, he's going to be a great player. The Braves sent him down. I think the consensus is he'll be up pretty soon. There's a lot of comparisons between the Braves' treatment of Acuna and the Cubs' treatment of Chris Bryant a few years ago. I don't know that it's fair. Yeah, what's just kind of the buzz around Braves camp about Acuna, about the decision to send him down?
Well, you drew a parallel there with Chris Bryant. It's the exact same thing. And to be quite honest, it's just a manipulation of service time by the general manager in the front office. Can't blame him at all because that's another year of control that they would have on the back end where you sacrifice 2 weeks worth of baseball and you get another full year on the back end of it. Now, the question is, what happens if you get to the end of the season, you miss the wild card by three games, and this guy could have helped you over that two-week span to maybe do that?
Yeah.
That's the risk that you take, but you're at the same time, you'd rather have that guy later in his career, and that's a year later that he hits free agency than otherwise if you were to bring him up. So the buzz around this kid is that he's a special player. There's really nothing that he's not been able to accomplish. And doing it at his age, that's the remarkable thing to me. There's so many different things that I've noticed about this guy. You could point to several different aspects of his game and say, wow, that's advanced for a 20-year-old. But where he really stands out to me is his knowledge of the strike zone. I don't typically see that out of guys as young as he is and inexperienced as he is. So you can bring up any kind of big-time prospect who can play defense and has a cannon for an arm and has great wheels and hits and hits for power and all those things. But when it comes with the kind of plate discipline this guy has, that's really eye-popping to me. I've seen him many times this spring go down 0-1, go down 0-2, go down 1-2, and has the discipline to lay off really difficult pitches, get the count back in his favor, get it to a 3-2 count, rip a double the opposite way to the gap. And you just don't really see that too many times out of a 20-year-old who's never seen the big league. So every day it's 3-for-3, it's 3-for-4, it's 2-for-3, it's a home run, it's back-to-back singles, it's a bases-clearing double. Every single day he's been in the news. And to see that out of someone so young, obviously people are extremely optimistic. So what also, something else I like about him is he has baseball in his blood. His dad and his grandfather both played minor league baseball. So this is a guy who grew up around professional baseball. So he's had that in him for a long time. None of this is new to him. I don't think the stage is going to be too big or the lights too bright for him to come up to the big leagues and thrive. So he's a huge part of what the Braves are doing. They're hoping that this is the year that they finally see that turnaround come about, and they've got so many other young guys that are part of what they're doing here at the big league level with Swanson and Albies and others. But this guy is definitely the biggest column that sticks out in my mind when you're looking at the young guys who are coming up in the Braves organization.
Let's stay with the parallels here then. The Cubs called Chris Bryant up on April the 17th. That was on a season that started roughly April the 4th. This season starts a little earlier. If I used April the 15th as an over-under date, is Acuna in Atlanta around April 15th?
I think so. Here's the deal. The day that he is able to come up without costing them that extra year is the 13th of April.
Okay.
The team is in Chicago. That's a Friday. They finish up a 9-game road trip in Chicago the 13th, 14th, and 15th. Then they come home on the 16th and have a 7-game homestand. Could they bring him up in that series in Chicago? They could. I don't think that they will. I think they're going to wait till that homestand on the 16th and let him start on Monday the 16th against Philly at home. Now, I could be wrong, but I think you, for the 15th, if you're circling that date, I think you're right on the button, because if it's not in that 3-game series in Chicago, it'll be that homestand, so long as everything is fine and everything, he's healthy and all that. So the 16th is the date that I would target, and anything before then would be, that'd be cool, because you could bring him up and throw him on the road and let him make his debut at Wrigley Field. I don't think anybody would complain about that, but I know that the city would be excited, and have him get his first start on that, on the first day of that new homestand would be pretty big.
Yeah, that would make a ton of sense from a marketing standpoint. Okay, staying with it, just one more question. That Cubs team got one of the wild cards. They ended up beating Pittsburgh for the wild card. They ended up making all the way to the NLCS. This Atlanta, Chris Bryant won the Rookie of the Year that year. Obviously, Acuna will be a strong candidate for Rookie of the Year. That part's not even questionable. Is this Braves team quite to the place that Cubs team was, where it was on the cusp of becoming really competitive, that it was right there and ended up being a wild card team? Could this Braves team be good enough, experienced enough to contend for a wild card this year?
Possibly, and here's why. I think there's one reason that you could say that you could make an argument for them doing that. I'd say the odds are against it, quite honestly. I don't think this team is as good as that 2015 Cubs team was, because I thought that Cubs team had better pitching. And I looked through that roster for 2015, and sure, you had so many young guys who were starting to make a name for themselves, but you had some rock stars in that rotation. Some really good players in that rotation, and I think that rotation was significantly better than what the Braves have. Where the Braves have it easier than that Cubs team is that this division is not very good. It's the Nationals and a bunch of also-rans, in my opinion. I think the Phillies will be dramatically improved because they have spent some money, and they get Santana and they get Arrieta, and they also had a few young pieces in that rotation that were really good with Nola and Hykoff and some of those other pitchers that they have. They're all right-handed, but I think that's a team that gets a lot better. But at the same time, this division is nowhere near what that NL Central was. You had a Cardinals team that won the division. You had a Cubs team that got a wild card. You had a Pirate team that won 98 games that year. So you had three teams that made the postseason. I don't think there will be anybody beyond the Nationals who get a snip of the postseason this year in the East, unless it's really just going after a wild card slot and being at the back of the pack, but just barely being in the screen when it comes to the visibility of the wild card. So I think that's where the teams out of the NL East will have a little bit of a break, is that you get to beat up on the Mets, you get to beat up on the Marlins, and beat up on each other a little bit. So I think that's the difference, but I don't think this Braves team is quite where that Cubs team was. I think we all felt like 2016 was going to be the biggest year for the Cubs. I definitely did. And what happened to them in 2015, I thought they were a year ahead of schedule. And then sure enough, a year later, we all remember what happened. They go out there and won the World Series. Chris Bryant wins the MVP. Anthony Rizzo is an all-star. And they have just a load of pitching in their rotation and their bullpen as well. So I don't think that the Braves are pitching-wise where that Cubs team was, but I think there are some similarities you could draw in the sense that they are taking a step in the right direction. And it would not be shocking to me if you got to Labor Day and all of a sudden people are looking at the wild card standing and saying, oh, wow, the Braves are five, six games out of the wild card and being within striking distance and at least being in the conversation. But that would be my high-end expectation for this team this year.
I was a little surprised, and again, I don't see the Braves anywhere close to as much as you do. I kind of thought, man, they're close. They're close to being in contention. I was a little surprised this offseason that they didn't get involved in the pitching market with an Arrieta, with an Alex Cobb, who I guess they could still get involved with because he's unemployed as of this moment, that they didn't maybe get involved with a Mike Moustakas just to get a veteran bat in there at all. It's not a criticism of the Braves. Again, it's just an observation. I'm wondering whether you thought they might make some moves along those lines or if you thought that they would sort of hold pat the way that they did.
I was like you. I thought there were opportunities there that they'd be able to take a shot at, and they didn't. And not just on the free agent market either, Neil. I was kind of thinking the whole sweepstakes for Christian Yelich, because what the Marlins were looking for with Yelich and for Ozuna and for Stanton was young guys they could plug into their farm system, controllable guys. Well, guess what? The Braves have a load of that. They've got one of the top three minor league systems in the game, and I felt you could make a deal for a Yelich or for a Realmuto or for Ozuna, and you wouldn't have to give up much of what you currently have at the big league level, because that's a team that's looking to cut payroll all the way down and really start all over again in their minor league system. The Braves had a need in corner outfield, and my whole logic was, why don't you give up two or three of your top prospects? And I'm really big on trading prospects. I'm not huge on coveting prospects. I think that they can help you win just as easily as trading them as they can developing them in your farm system and bringing them up. This is the end for Nick Markakis for this year on his contract. Why don't you trade Markakis and a bunch of prospects and bring along this guy and see if they are taking it? I know that they toyed with the idea, but the Marlins apparently didn't want a deal that did not involve Ronald Acuna. I understand that. The Braves didn't want to trade him. But to answer your question, I was a little bit surprised that they weren't more involved, because whether or not you thought that you were ready for that, whether or not that you were planning on having a very active offseason, to me that all goes out the window when the opportunities are there, when that window of opportunity is there. And with so many teams gearing up and clearing their payroll for free agency 2018 turning into 2019, because next year's free agent class is going to be one for the record books with so many names, there are so many teams who are setting aside money for that and wanting to spend a year from now rather than right now. That's why you have so many free agents who are still on the market. I looked at that as an opportunity where I was thinking to myself, okay, I can either go up there a year from now and compete with half a dozen other teams for said free agent and drive up the price, or why don't I just be a big fish in a small pond right now? There's not a whole lot of competition for spending money right now. There are a lot of big names out there that I could spend money on that really, value-wise, are about the same as guys who will be available next year. And there are needs that I have that could be met through free agency right now. And I asked Alex Anthopoulos about that, the general manager of the Braves. And his whole reasoning for hitting the pause button and not really jumping into this free agent market right now was, number one, he comes from a scouting background. He wants to see what he has with his own eyes. He wants to evaluate what he has with his own eyes. And I understand that. You don't want to take anyone else's word on what you may or may not have in your minor league system and start trading off 18, 19, 20-year-olds before you even know exactly what they are. So I know that that was his hesitation. And I feel like a year from now, the Braves will be in a position where they will want to spend money and they'll want to jump into the sweepstakes for maybe not someone like a Bryce Harper, but maybe they could be in the Machado sweepstakes. Maybe they could be in the sweepstakes for some other pitcher that's going to be a top-quality pitcher, an ace-like pitcher a year from now. So that would be my assumption. But to me, the opportunity was there without a ton of other competition from other teams. And that was a little bit surprising to me that they did not enter those sweepstakes now rather than a year from now.
Yeah, I thought Yelich would have made a ton of sense for them. And then I thought Jake Arrieta on a four-year deal with some of those young pitchers that are there, Teron and Fulton Evans and some of the other guys. I thought he has a veteran presence just with his work ethic alone. You know, sometimes those young guys, seeing an older guy, the way that he puts work in, it sort of sets an alarm off in their heads that says, oh, that's how you have to do this to get to the next level. And some of those guys have so much natural skill, maybe a veteran would accelerate their development a little bit. But I certainly understand the philosophy of waiting. So along those lines, you talk about the National League East. It's clearly the Nationals' division to win again. It's theirs for the taking. They're the best team in the division this year. You've seen them some, I would assume, or been around them some this spring. How much pressure is on the Nationals, given it's Bryce Harper's contract year? The consensus is he's going to walk, whether it's to Philly or the Dodgers or the Cubs or wherever. How much pressure is it on the Nationals to not just win the division? They haven't won a playoff series. They brought in Dave Martinez. It kind of feels like if you don't win now, winning meaning get to the World Series, if you don't do it now, your window might just slam shut right in front of you.
I think this is the end of their window, quite frankly, for 2018. And to answer your question, there's a ton of pressure, more so on Mike Rizzo than anybody. And I think if you're looking for proof of that, just look at how many managers he's gone through in the last six seasons. I mean, he just went from Dusty to Martinez, and they've been through about three or four different managers in the last six or seven seasons, something like that. They know that there's a window here. I was a little bit surprised that they did not spend on Jake Arrieta. I thought that he was going to land with them. First off, he's a Boris guy, and they get so many Boris guys, the Nationals do. And if I'm looking at it from their perspective, from their payroll, and I see Bryce Harper, Daniel Murphy, free agents at the end of this season, if I don't re-sign them, well, it doesn't matter how big of a contract they give Jake Arrieta. I can afford him because I'm not going to have those guys. But they have so many big names on that team, mostly in the rotation, and I'm thinking, okay, after this season, sure, they'll still have a really strong rotation. They still have Scherzer. They still have Strasburg. Gio may or may not be with them next year. We'll see how things work out with his contract negotiations. But they'll be losing two really big bats if they're not able to go out there and re-sign Murphy and Harper. Ryan Zimmerman is getting much older. They lost Jason Worth a year ago, and he's not coming back. Anthony Rendon, another year on his timeline. So I think this is the year for them. And I think that's why the decisions were made. Look, that's a team that won 97, 98 games last year, and they go out there and they get a brand-new manager. That, to me, screams pressure on the general manager. And if they don't go out there and win this year, and let's say they go to the offseason and they lose Harper and they lose Murphy, I think they're starting from basically back to zero, because I think they'll be starting with a brand-new general manager. I think Mike Rizzo knows that. So this is the year that they have to not only get to the postseason, but they have to win. And they've had so many good teams, and there have been so many people around baseball who would say talent-wise they're as good or better than anybody that's been out there for the last three or four years, yet they don't have a playoff series victory to speak of. They've not been able to advance beyond the divisional round. I think that reflects on the general manager when you've been through two or three managers over the last four or five seasons. So a lot of pressure on him. I think they can look in the rearview mirror and see the Phillies coming, see the Braves getting stronger.
For sure.
See that the Mets are still a talented team when they are healthy. And I think they realize if they don't get it done here in 2018, if not now, then when? And they missed their opportunity in a big way if they don't win in 2018.
Given what happened this offseason with free agency, so many guys not getting the kind of contracts they thought they'd get, whether they should have gotten them or what, whatever happened, how do you think that, if at all, impacts Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, as those guys get ready to go into free agency? Do you think this is the beginning of a trend, or do you think this was an anomaly and that next season teams throw the massive deals at Machado, at Harper in the offseason?
So those are the two names that are really interesting. I think what we saw this year is a reflection of teams saying, we don't want to get into a situation like the Marlins got into as Giancarlo Stanton, and we give them a 10-11 year deal. We don't want to get into a situation like the Angels got into with Albert Pujols, and here's 11 years and $300 million. We don't. To me, that's not a good investment, and I understand that. And I think this free agent class and all the guys who did not sign is direct reflection of that. But it's when you get the big time superstars that those deals take place. And I think that the owners have made a clear statement saying we're not overpaying for guys like Alex Cobb. We're not overpaying for guys like Mike Moustakas. And that's understandable, and those are really good players, but they're not superstar elite players like Machado and Harper are. And the Harper thing is what's really interesting to me. I feel like if anybody is going to demand the kind of contract that Giancarlo Stanton got, it's going to be Bryce Harper, because this guy is still in his mid-20s. And you can make the argument that his best days are still out in front of him. So to me, if you're a team like the Cubs, or the Dodgers, or the Yankees, the Phillies, who have a lot more money to spend with a new TV contract that they got a year ago, I think this would be the opportunity to say, okay, against our better judgment, this is the kind of player we could invest 9, 10, 11 years in, and upwards of $400, $500 million on a contract. If I'm Bryce Harper, I'm thinking, if Giancarlo Stanton got $375 million, then that should be a rock-bottom figure for what I should demand in free agency. There are some people that feel like you'll get $500 million over a span of 12 years, Bryce Harper. And if you can get that kind of money, man, go out there and grab it. And obviously, it'd be the biggest contract the game has ever seen.
Sure.
But to me, that's the anomaly that next year's free agent class could present. That, to me, is so entertaining, where I think the owners have spoken and said, we're not overpaying, we're not giving so many years, especially the pitchers, on a contract. I think this is the exception to the rule of what we saw this free agent class, where you could say, okay, we would overpay, we would overpromise, we would go overboard to land a guy like Bryce Harper, because obviously he's going to help you with his talent, but wherever he lands, he's going to be the biggest sports figure in that town, most likely. He's extremely marketable. He's going to sell a lot of tickets, and he's going to put up big-time numbers. And all of a sudden, you have a perennial year in, year out, MVP elite candidate in Major League Baseball. So that's what you're getting. And the Stanton trade, I think, to me, it was the worst kept secret in baseball that Harper was going to be a Yankee. The Stanton trade really derailed all of that, and it really changed people's thinkings on where Harper might land in free agency next year. And they still could go out there and get him. They could. They've got enough money. They could do it. Could they throw him? So could they find a place for him in the outfield? Of course they could. But I think it makes a lot more sense for them to spend their money on a guy like Machado, where third base is definitely a void for them in New York, than it would going after someone that they really don't need in another outfielder. So I do think the Yankees will be a player in the Bryce Harper sweepstakes, but I don't think they'll be the odds-on favorite like folks thought that they were going to be. And places like Philly, Chicago, and Los Angeles now make a lot more sense for Bryce Harper.
Yeah, you know, the only scenario where I see Harper going to New York now, and I always, like you, I thought it was a done deal. He was going to be a Yankee.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the Yankees could trade Stanton to L.A. and open up the spot, but I don't, you know, L.A. did not want to get involved in that a year ago, and something tells me they don't want to get involved in that now. They've got to lock Clayton Kershaw up. I mean, he has the ability
right.
to opt out of his deal, and he's going to want a generational deal, and God knows he deserves one. He's been the dominant pitcher for, what, a decade? So, I mean, you know, it gets weird, and there's this assumption that the Cubs will be heavily involved. I know my son, God bless him, is just convinced himself that Bryce Harper is going to be a Cub, and I keep looking at it, and I say, you know, I see on one hand where it makes sense, and then on another hand, mm-hmm. I don't think it makes a ton of sense. You sign Bryce Harper, you're basically saying, hey, we're not going to be able to keep at least two of these core guys that we might
right.
have otherwise been able to keep. And I don't know that that's the decision that they make. Certainly not if, let's say, Kyle Schwarber plays well, that Jason Hayward has an okay kind of a stabilizing year. You know, they want to keep Chris Bryant. They want to keep Anthony Rizzo. They want to keep Wilson Contreras down the road. You can't do all of those things and give Bryce Harper $500 million.
Right. And I think that's a decision that a lot of general managers on baseball are trying to figure out. See, if I sign this guy a year from now, what's that going to cost me for the length of his contract? Not just monetarily, but who am I not going to be able to sign because I've signed this guy over here? That's why the Stanton thing is so interesting to me with the Yankees, because if you really wanted to make a strong argument for a move taking money out of Bryce Harper's pocket, it would be the Yankees making the trade for Giancarlo Stanton, because having that, I mean, that was going to be the key player in this game. That was going to be the team that was probably going to be able to commit the most money towards this guy. Now that that team's off the board, or maybe I shouldn't say off the board, but it isn't in a situation where they need him like they did a year ago. And it's really interesting how that affects the other teams who maybe would have been out of the running, but maybe are in it now because they think, okay, well, if the major player is off the board, the team who could spend the most is off the board, maybe the price tag comes down for Bryce Harper. Now, obviously, a lot of that changes over the course of the next 6 months. What kind of season does he have? Does he have multiple hamstring injuries and miss 40 games? Does he go out there and have the season like he had a few years ago where he won the MVP and looked like the second coming of Joe DiMaggio or something like that? It all depends. And if this guy, think of how much business will be dictated by what the Nationals as a whole do or do not do this season. If they go out there and they win in the postseason, let's say they win the World Series, Murphy's stock is through the roof, Harper's stock is through the roof, Mike Rizzo keeps his job, all of a sudden the Nationals might have the ability to re-sign some of those guys and continue to thrive for years to come, and maybe their window gets reopened. But if they don't, what does that do to Bryce Harper's free agent situation for other teams around baseball? What does it do for the Nationals? Does that window officially close in 2018? I think so much hinges on their success, as particularly October success, because if there's anything that can help a player when it comes to his free agent year, his walk year, it's what he does or doesn't do in October. I've seen guys who have had very mediocre seasons in their free agent year and then make it to the postseason, catch on fire, have a really good three-week run, and all of a sudden their free agent stock is through the roof. So I think all that is really interesting with Bryce Harper and how that plays out, because there's so many different directions that this thing could go, and how are the Yankees involved in that? Because, like I said, what they have right now is the ability to have the best 1-2 punch power-wise with Judge and Stanton that the game has seen, honestly, in at least 15 years, and maybe you could go all the way back to Maris and Mantle in the 60s. Maris and Mantle hit 115 home runs in 1961. The next group of teammates to even come close to that was Bonds and Aurelia in 2001, when Bonds, of course, hit 73 bombs. But if these guys were on the same team last year, they hit 111 home runs combined. These guys have the ability to do something that we've not seen in a very long time, and I think the Yankees want to hold on to that and do that for years to come, because those two guys, I think, are 25 and 27 years old, and to me, that directly impacts free agency, Bryce Harper, and other teams and what they're planning on spending or not spending once we get to free agency 2018-19.
I know you get to see the Yankees on Monday. They'll play an exhibition game there at SunTrust Park in Atlanta, and then the Future Stars the next day, then an open date, and then the thing kicks off for real. The Phillies come to town to play in Atlanta, 4:10 Eastern, 3:10 Central, there on the 29th. I'm excited the season's here. I'm sure you are too. Enjoy your last off day of the spring until, I guess you get one on the 28th, but you'll be busy the day before opening day. Enjoy the season. Thanks so much for the time, and always love visiting with you, and can't wait to catch your work on the Braves Network, and then love to catch up with you sometime after the season gets started.
Yeah, thank you very much. We'll do it again anytime you want, man.
Ben, thanks, buddy. I appreciate you. Our thanks to Ben Ingram for his time today on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. The Beer Garden is also brought to you in part by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999 is the number. You can call that number ahead of time if you want, for coming in for a spring baseball series weekend. You're coming up for the Grove Bowl in a few weeks. Let Greg Jones know what you want. He'll have it ready for you, or you can go in and browse, look at all of the fresh cuts, the freshest cuts in Oxford, right there at LB's, the beef prime and upper choice USDA grade beef, exclusive grass-fed naked beef from Joyce Farms, the free-range Joyce Farms chicken breast, also the locally raised pork from Home Place Pastures in Como, and then fresh fish from the Gulf of Mexico. All of that at LB's. Check out the sausages too. It's that time of year. They've got the fresh sausage. The ribeye sausage is always a favorite. The black and blue, the Swayze sausage with beer, bacon, and cheese. the Oxford Italian, free-range chicken jalapeno, so much more. Lots of smoked sausages as well. The smoked pork that Ajax uses. So many of you are Ajax fans. The smoked boudin, smoked chicken jalapeno, all there at LB's. Again, 662-259-2999. Now, if you can answer this trivia question, if you're the first person to answer this trivia question, it's about the Atlanta Braves. You can answer the question on Twitter, at me, at Neil McCready, at LB's Food Truck. That's LB's Food Truck. And also include hashtag Beer Garden in your answer. If you're the first one, you win a $25 gift certificate to LB's Meat Market. In the famous Sid Slid game, Game 7 of the 1992 National League Championship Series against the Pittsburgh Pirates, who was on deck when Francisco Cabrera delivered the winning hit for the Atlanta Braves? Who was on deck when Francisco Cabrera delivered the winning hit for the Atlanta Braves? Send that answer to me on Twitter, at Neil McCready, at LB's Food Truck, hashtag Beer Garden, and you win $25, $25 gift certificate, I should say, to LB's Meat Market. All right, now let's get back to the show. Brett Taylor covers the Chicago Cubs for Bleacher Nation. He joined last night, and here's that interview about the Cubs, the National League Central, and more here on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Okay, Brett, as we record this, it's just 9 days till the start of the baseball season, which I know is really exciting for me. So for you, it's probably somewhere in the euphoria slash orgasmic slash fantasia stage of life. I would think you get pretty pumped this time of year.
I'm glad you threw fantasia in there, because now I'm like, yeah, it's the brooms marching. That's me, you know, processing toward the start of the season. You know, it's funny that I think about last offseason. Of course, Cubs fans were coming off the World Series win. That offseason felt especially short because it was just, you know, not only because the season itself lasted long, but there was just that tidal wave of emotion that carried us through the offseason. This offseason felt much longer, but I don't know if you would agree, but for me, it felt much more, a much greater sense of anticipation about the season ahead. Like I feel much more excited about this season to come than I felt last year at this time about 2017. I mean, I think, and I don't think that's any great revelation. I think it's pretty obvious why, but I'm digging that right now. Like I feel, you know, I just feel more excited for this season than I did last year.
It's the first time, obviously, you know, last year they'd won the World Series, and I was still, it's why I never got mad at a baseball team last year when they struggled. I thought, well, hell, I'm hungover. I can only imagine how hungover they must be emotionally, because they'd lose, whatever. And so it just was, it just didn't register. And even in the NLCS, you know, when they lost, I was like, you know, the Dodgers are fresher than us. They're better than us, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, we won the World Series. I'm good. And this offseason, it's kind of like this is the first time that I've truly enjoyed, okay, they won a World Series, and now I get to just sort of enjoy a baseball season. There's not all of the stuff from all the pre-World Series where is it ever going to happen? Am I going to live long enough? And then last year where it was all the hangover stuff. This year it's, okay, I'm a guy that's followed the same baseball team all of my life. They're really, really good. This is the heart of the competitive window. I don't have to worry about are they ever going to win a World Series, and there's not the hangover stuff. And it's as excited in a calm way as I've been about a baseball season probably since I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably a lot like what Red Sox fans felt earlier in the 2000s, you know, the transition to, you know, I thought we would kind of feel it last year, but I think you're right. Last year had still so much of the carryover from the World Series. Everything was contextualized through the lens of, oh yeah, but they just won the World Series. Whereas now it's this transition into, okay, for lack of a better way to describe it, it's like we're transitioning into just a fan of a team. Like it's a regular team like any other team. It sounds like a negative, but I don't necessarily mean it in a negative way. And now we get to, yeah, just enjoy a regular team. I think you put that really well. I also think that it helps this year that I think this is a better team at the margins on paper than last year's team was. Even if you set aside the hangover stuff, which I think we all pretty much now accept was legit. I think this is a better team on paper. I think this is more akin to the 2016 team in terms of how they looked going into the season. The projections don't necessarily say that, but I don't know. I see a lot more upside in this roster than last year.
Yeah, I do too. There's the from a pitching standpoint, it's not even close. I'm going to get to that in a second. I want to be the idiot that launches forward into 2019 before a single pitch of 2018 has been thrown.
Who cares about 2018?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, 2018. I'm so over it.
Yeah. March. It's March. What difference does it make? I gave my son Carson is he's 11, and his Christmas present this past Christmas was the Cubs convention. It was a big secret. And he didn't find out about it until the morning. It's Christmas morning. He was really pumped. Flew him to Chicago, and we stayed at the Sheraton where the convention was, and all of that stuff. So it was a big deal. And he's at that age where, you know, he's one of those people that he has no idea, really, Brett, what the hell you and I are talking about all this torture and stuff. He really doesn't get it because, you know, the Cubs went to the NLCS when he was 9. They won the World Series when he was 10. They went back to the NLCS when he's 11. They win. That's what they do, and that's all he really remembers. Nobody remembers what a team did when they were 4. And so, you know, he looks at it and thinks, why are you so scared of the Cardinals, Dad? I don't get it. So anyway, Took him to the Cubs convention, and on the Saturday he had won the little lottery thing where he had he got the Chris Bryant voucher, so he was going to get Chris Bryant's autograph, and so he was pumped up about that. But I said, hey, the one thing I want to do before we go get in line for Bryant is I want to go to the deal with Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer and all of that, the front office meeting. And he said, do you get to ask questions? And I said, yeah, you know, you'll probably get to ask questions. And he goes, I have a question. And I said, okay. And I was being a dumb dad, I just thought, like I told you earlier, I kind of thought, well, you know, he's real hung up on Javi Baez and Addison Russell and who should be the shortstop and who should be the second baseman and would it work better if they switched and all of that. And so I really thought that was the question when he said, I'm going up to get in line to ask a question, Dad. And I said, okay. And he goes and gets in the line. I really thought he was going to ask them, you know, should you move Addison to second and move Javi to shortstop? And would that work better? And would everybody be happy? And that's really what I thought he was going to ask, because that's what he asked me almost daily. And and so he gets to his spot. He waits because there was several people in front of him. And he gets to his spot. And he immediately says, not Mr. Epstein or anything like that, like I had told him, make sure you address him, Mr. Epstein. But he'd been standing in line so long that he says, Theo, when can I get my Bryce Harper jersey? And I just sort of slid down in my chair. And then I thought, Theo gave a smart-ass answer about, you know, you should ask Chris Bryant. He knows better than me. But I thought, as he asked the question, you know, everything goes in slow motion. I thought, you know, there's probably a lot of people in the room right now that wonder that exact thing. Same thing, maybe not in those words, but the general thought, they kind of wonder. I was just kind of, I know you were in the room when you see the little kid walk up and ask that question. Did you get a kick out of it? What'd you think?
Yeah, I was in that. I was one of those people you're talking about. I was in that room, and I thought it was fun. I mean, I think setting aside whether you think it's a good question or not in terms of like getting info from the front office, I mean, you're not going to get that in that setting anyway. So it's like, let's just have fun and have fun questions. And I thought not only the topic, especially because that's such a buzzy topic, right? Especially with all the Chris Bryant stuff. But not only the topic, but the way he asked, it was funny. It was just so funny. It was such a nice moment. And I think it came up again at the kids panel, because Chris Bryant was on the kids panel. I don't think you and your son were there necessarily, but someone asked, or Rizzo said to him something about, like, you know, that the fans at the earlier panel want to know when they can get their Bryce Harper jersey. And so I think he asked Chris Bryant that. And
yeah.
I don't know. He demurred, didn't say anything interesting, but I just thought it was funny. It was, that was, That was a moment. That was a cool. That's exactly what the convention's supposed to be. So that was great.
Yeah, he had a lot of fun with it. He came back and he said, "Dad, I was just so nervous. I forgot everything I wanted to say." And I said, "No, it was good. You did great." And let me ask this, because look, I know what he'll, if in the event that the winter meetings are in Las Vegas in November, and in the event that it's the big splash and the Cubs get Bryce Harper, I know what he wants for Christmas, so that'll be easy. Does Bryce Harper to the Cubs on the kind of contract that it would probably take to get Bryce Harper to the Cubs? Does it? I know it would obviously make them a even bigger story than they already are, and all of those things. Does it, as of today, Brett, make a lot of sense?
Well, so normally, typically, I would say no, particularly with some of the expenditures that the Cubs laid out this offseason with Jason Hayward's contract in right field. But here's the thing. I'm going to pause on that because the reality is generational talents simply do not come to the free agent market when they're 26 years old. That just doesn't happen. And so in the rare event that it does, which, by the way, there's going to be two of them this offseason in Harper and Manny Machado, I think you kind of have to throw out a lot of the thinking about roster construction and resources out the window when you're talking about an organization like the Cubs with a front office that recognizes there's very few times when you can leverage your spending power to make a really, really fundamental shift in your performance for, you know, a given period of time. So as a general matter, I would say to anybody who says that Bryce Harper doesn't fit, it doesn't make sense, there's too much money locked up in the outfield, there's no spots there, et cetera, et cetera, I'd say you're right about all that, but I'm not sure it's going to matter because of the nature of this player. So that's one thing. Now, small little caveat to that, is it'll be interesting to see the year that Jason Hayward has, because although he has no trade rights for the first 2 years of his deal, he doesn't after this year. So that'd be interesting. Maybe he makes himself tradable enough that if the Cubs eat some salary, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Too far down that road. Very speculative. I don't know that we will get there, but it's just something to keep in mind when you think about the potential of Harper. And I think it wouldn't shock me to learn that that was perhaps a consideration when that contract was being structured, because it's not like everybody didn't know when Harper was going to be a free agent. So putting all that aside, the reality of a free agency like this, for the very same reason I just said it's not crazy to talk about the Cubs and Harper, it's not going to be crazy to talk about a whole lot of teams in Bryce Harper or Manny Machado or, you know, any kind of player like that, because particularly in this time where we have, what, 8 to 10 teams that are seriously rebuilding right now, well, they're going to turn the corner, several of them. And that's when you see surprising teams kind of jump into these big bidding wars, particularly for younger free agents, because they can align them quite well with the core that they've built up during their rebuilding process. And so it's really not hard to imagine a team like the Phillies or a team like the Braves or a team like, the Pirates, teams that might otherwise on paper shock you to be a serious bidder for a player like that. Well, they're not spending any money on payroll because they have a young core. Perhaps they might step up and really, and at the minimum, push that market even further north. So, sorry, I gave you like a million words on that. I mean, I'm pretty into this topic, obviously. But I just think that the pursuit of Bryce Harper is going to be probably unlike anything we've seen in recent memory in terms of a traditional free agent.
You know what's funny is I don't know, something about him and his personality, but in the event, and I don't think it's all trolling. In fact, I think the interest in Chicago and all of that and playing at Wrigley and playing with his friend Chris Bryant, I think it's all very legitimate. I don't think he's that good of a troll, because that would be just an incredible troll job. But the part of it that is probably a troll job, I find it really amusing. It's like, it's kind of funny. It shows a part of a personality that, frankly, I think is kind of, I think you and I are on the exact same page on this. I like some of the bat flips and some of the personality and stuff. And the fact that he's having some fairly innocent fun with fans makes me laugh. It cracks me up. I mean, good for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and he of course, has the talent to back it up. But I love guys like that, that guys that recognize, especially at a young age, you know, you're on this stage only for so long. You do have this opportunity to, yeah, be a role model, whatever we want to call that. But you also have an opportunity to just show people that you're out there having fun, too, that you can. I've always felt like you can connect more fans to the experience of baseball through silliness and fun. Because, like, let's be real about what this game is. You know, it's dudes in pajamas slapping a ball around, and their head coach is wearing the pajamas alongside them. You ever think about how ridiculous that is?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's crazy when you see a grown 70-year-old man, 60-something-year-old man, walking out in the same baseball uniform. It just looks silly. But
like, what is he going to – if a guy gets hurt, he going to pick up the glove and be like, all right, I'm ready. But I think if we just – if we're honest and we acknowledge it, then you can set aside a lot of the BS that derails baseball some of the time with, like, it's such serious business and there are the unwritten rules and you got to respect the code and yada, yada, yada. It's like, that doesn't make kids connect to the sport. It doesn't make me happier. It doesn't make anyone that I like to enjoy the game with any happier. You know what does is, man, if I were a Nationals fan or even just a baseball fan, when he hit that home run in the NLDS that won them that game in Washington, and he turns just nonchalant, playing it cool, and he tosses that bat because he knew he crushed it, that's fun. That's just fun. I mean, I can look back now, Cubs won the series, and that's a fun moment that, I don't know, I'm just not interested in people saying that it's, you know, disrespectful, especially when he's got all the talent in the world. And he can back it up. So if he wants to play it that way, good for him. And I would love to watch him doing those things in a Cubs uniform, but wherever he winds up, I will enjoy.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that so many people like, you know, like Javi Baez, or they like Jose Altuve, or they like some of the guys who just let it go a little, have some fun, and no one's showing it. I don't want anybody showing anybody up. And all that stuff. But if you're just having some fun with it, it's cool. I mean, I don't think you have to be this button-down ball player that has no expression, no emotion, and all those things. I don't think that's appealing to young people at all. I mean, young people like the NBA, and a lot of young people like the European soccer, and those guys, when they score a goal, their reaction is not buttoned down. It's pretty crazy, and kids like that.
Put your head. Imagine some soccer superstar scoring a goal and putting his head down and walking and trotting, act like you've been there before.
Back to midfield for the next kickoff. Exactly. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, my like, there's too much, right? Like, it has to be organic, but. Imagine, you know, Pedro Strop facing Wilson Contreras. You know, that is where it's at for me. If Wilson wins that battle, man, he's going to turn and spin and toss his bat. But if Pedro gets him, he's going to scream and pump his fists. And they are going to, because they both know where each other is coming from, they're going to respect the hell out of each other no matter what happens, because they want to win in that moment. It's not about disrespecting the other one. It's about, you do have so much respect for the other one that when you win, you are pumped.
Let's talk about the season coming up, the one that actually is going to get played. Bryce Harper, I believe, will play for the Nationals this season. That's breaking. the Cubs, obviously, are the favorite in the National League Central. Before I get to what the Cubs did in the offseason and what they look like, how surprised are you that as we tape this, it appears Alex Cobb's headed to Baltimore, St. Louis, and Milwaukee? Both teams that clearly needed pitching. There was pitching out there that they could have gotten engaged on. Neither team really added significantly to their starting pitching. Milwaukee didn't add at all. How surprised are you, given where that was clearly a need for those two teams, knowing what the Cubs looked like, that's who they're chasing? They really didn't do a lot there. They both added offensively, St. Louis especially with Ozuna, but neither team really bolstered their pitching staffs.
Yeah, surprised, particularly with respect to the Brewers. Once they kind of put both feet in, getting Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, it's like, okay, I mean, that's cool, but you need to now address the rotation. If you're really going to push that much right now to be a winner in the next 2-3 years. I just don't know that you can survive with seven number fours. But, you know, the other side of that is, and I'm reacting sort of on the fly because I just updated this right before we got on the phone, but apparently that Cobb deal is going to be 4 years and $60 million, which that's kind of like what he was hoping to get.
Yeah.
So it's not as if his market collapsed so much that you're looking at the Brewers and shaking your fist and saying, how in the world could you have let that happen? I mean, the Lance Lynn deal was dirt cheap with the Twins. You know, I don't like him as much as Cobb, so that's, I think, debatable. Some of the bigger deals, you know, just the Brewers are not going to sign Jake Arrieta for $25 million annually. That's never going to be in their budget. So maybe if I'm being kind now as I sit and I look back and think more specifically with the moves that were made, it's like, okay, maybe I can understand how this played out. But in the more aggregate sense, I just don't understand how you go into that offseason, make the moves that the Brewers did, and not add a significant pitching upgrade. I think they were hoping they were going to be able to trade an outfielder to make it happen, and I think that deal just never came through for them. But they might be regretting that midseason when they've got a fine offense and they just can't get a starting pitcher into the fifth inning.
Yeah, you're kinder. You're kinder to them than I can be because, I know being reactionary is a surefire way to ruin your organization's plan, but when you're those two teams and you see the Cubs go out and get Tyler Chatwood, you say, okay. But when they add you Darvish, you say, okay, well, you know what they're going to probably be offensively with all of the good young players that they have. It seems I would, if I'm a fan of one of those two teams, I'm not particularly happy that my team didn't react at all to the Darvish signing.
Well, and again, especially after having made moves that were near-term moves that were very suggestive of wanting to win right now, trying to take advantage of, you know, maybe a perception that the Cubs are beatable after last year. The Yu Darvish signing just had to be, you know, I don't know who would admit it, but that had to be kind of crushing to a lot of Cardinals and Brewers fans because that really perfected the Cubs offseason. I mean, I think they had a better offseason on paper than the Cardinals or Brewers, and they were the ones getting talked about the whole way up. So I was just going to finish up with respect to the Cardinals not adding another starting pitcher. I can at least understand it a little more from their perspective because they do have quite a bit of nice young pitching talent percolating up toward that AAA level that, you know, they essentially dumped Mike Leake just so that they could open up space to explore those guys. And so I wouldn't say I'm going to defend the Cardinals, but I can certainly understand that one a little bit more. The Brewers, you know, I get it. They got a low payroll. They only have so much they can fit, but man, if I'm a Brewers fan, I'm just like, why did you go halfway? Why did you go halfway?
Yeah, that's me too. I kind of get it. I'm with you with the Cardinals a little bit. I sort of understand. If you're St. Louis, you have to look at that contract that Lance Lynn got, and maybe you think Lance Lynn's really on the tail end of his career, and there's certain some analytics to point that out. But I would have been tempted, at least if I were the Cardinals, to match that just from a depth standpoint. But regardless, so let's look at the Central. The Cubs, I think it's theirs to win for the third straight year, which is remarkable in and of itself. When you look at this Cubs team, and you referenced it earlier, on all the margins, I think this is the best. This might be the best team that they've had in this era in terms of overall depth. Everyone's experienced now. It's a much deeper starting rotation than perhaps they've had in the past. Maybe there's some questions at the end of the bullpen. When you look at this team, what are the kind of the assuming, you know, general health, obviously, what are the two or three things you're sort of looking for as the season gets started to say, okay, well, this is what I'm kind of looking for out of this team. This team is shaping up to be a team that could do X. I mean, what are the key things you're sort of watching?
Well, one that absolutely stands out is that you look at the front four in the rotation and you say, if these four guys are just simply are who they can be, and then you look at Tyler Chatwood, who's just 28, who was pitching in Colorado, who was coming back from injuries, who everyone agrees has incredible stuff and the incredible ability to be right there among those four pitchers at the front of the Cubs rotation. You know, I almost am going to be watching him the closest of any of the Cubs starters, because if he emerges as that guy, yeah, I hate throwing around historic, but it's like we've lived through this era where there have really been legitimately historic circumstances connected to the Cubs. And I could see this rotation being truly, truly special. And that's probably, I wouldn't say that's necessarily the thing that excites me the most about this season, because you could just get so excited about so many parts of this team. But that's the thing that's just kind of at the fore of my mind, especially because when I think of that 2016 team, although everybody associates this Cubs window with the young positional core and Rizzo and Bryant and the offensive performance, it was really the pitching staff that drove the success in 2016. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what this group can do this year. And so they're just so fun to watch. I mean, like, this is going to be so fun to watch this rotation. Elsewhere, you know, the bullpen, it's interesting. You know, you look at the names, it's a group of a ton of guys who've had like closing experience or been top setup men. Like, it's just front to back great relievers. And yet I'm guaranteed neither of us are sitting here saying, yeah, I feel perfectly comfortable with the bullpen. It's going to be great. Most of that is just the nature of bullpens. That's just, you're never going to have that same level of comfort about a bullpen as anywhere else, because that's, you know, that's the nature of relievers. But, you know, I'm a little bit nervous. I mean, the Cubs are counting on some guys to play key roles who either really extended themselves last year, i.e. Brandon Morrow, or had some really, really dodgy issues with the Cubs last year, Justin Wilson, and guys who faded at the end of the year, Montgomery, Edwards. So there's plenty of questions there if you wanted to ask them about the bullpen. And so we know how, even with a great starting rotation, Joe Maddon likes to limit his starters, especially early in the year. So we're going to see a lot of that bullpen. And I will be very interested to see and hopeful, whoever it is, give me two or three of those guys who either continue forward their success this year or step up. And it's like, okay, cool. Finally, it looks like, you know, Carl Edwards is going to be like that lights out guy that we know he could be. So I guess, you know, I'm really looking at that pitching side. Offensively, you know, everybody knows the storylines of what you're like trying to see. Is Kyle Schwarber going to continue his success from the second half, be this beast of an offensive dude that we know he can be? Is Jason Hayward ever going to return to being a positive offensive contributor? I think right now the default position after 2 years is that you've got to say no. And as they go, a lot of the offense is going to go, because most of the guys, they're going to do what they do. You know, I think Javi Baez might be right around the league average hitter. That's fine with his glove. Addison Russell probably got a little bit upside beyond that. Rizzo and Bryant will get theirs. Wilson Contreras will get his. I mean, he looks locked in this spring. So, you know, I dig the offense. I think there's tons of upside there too. And so, you know, I think this team has a wide berth of possibilities. If every phase is clicking as much as it can, this is a 105 win team. Like, I don't think it's crazy to say that.
No, I don't either.
If they have the struggles, you know, if the bullpen doesn't get settled for a while, if a rotation, you know, I mean, let's set aside injuries, because that can just totally wreck everything anyway. But, you know, if we see Lester continue to slide a little bit as he ages, if Chatwood doesn't break out, you know, maybe that isn't as a prodigious a rotation as we hoped. And if offensively guys kind of just stay where they are from last year, then, you know, then we're talking about like a 92 win team, which is, I think, still going to be enough to win the Central, but it might not be quite as sexy as we're hoping as we sit here today.
Yeah. I have this feeling that, and I know on your site, there's going to be tons of this, especially unless somebody steps up, you know, whether it's Morrow or Edwards or whoever. If someone steps up and is the lockdown all-star closer, then this goes by the wayside. But if that doesn't happen, I think there's going to be a lot of people looking at almost like a 2016 impact sort of trade with a closer at the close to the deadline or at the deadline, and people will then be reading into which of these young pieces get dealt to get that piece. And, you know, what is, and then along those lines, I mean, kind of taking the whole thing full circle, and what does that necessarily mean for their pursuit of Bryce Harper in the offseason? There's going to be all of these multifaceted things that sort of all come together, you know, somewhere around the middle to end of July that everyone's going to try to read into. And the bottom line is, at least in my opinion, if you're Theo Epstein and you're Jed Hoyer and those people, you know you have this window that probably goes through at least 2021, and you're trying your very damnedest to get as many rings in that window as you can, because every ring's so hard to get, as the 1990s Braves can tell you. It's so hard to get one. You never know when you're going to have a chance at another one, and so you don't. It's not that you're mortgaging your future, but if you have to trade a chip in to get the final piece, you do it. And I think people will be trying to see who is that chip? Is it Ian Happ? Is it Albert Almora? Is it Kyle Schwarber? Who is it that allows you to get that last piece that puts you over the top and in a spot where not only do you have a chance at a ring, but you have a real chance at a ring?
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right that that's going to coalesce midseason with the thinking about, you know, what's the interplay between this and what we're going to do next offseason, and where might we be able to open a door and maybe ding a little bit right now, but it's a little bit better for next year, but we can still perform this year. I mean, all of that stuff. I think you're totally right that it's all going to coordinate at midseason, depending on how the needs develop, and probably, as is usually the case, in ways that right now we totally can't predict.
I want to touch on two other teams that I know you don't cover every day, but you know baseball as well as anyone that I follow. The Astros are in a kind of similar boat that the Cubs were in this time a year ago. They've got this really good young team and this great young core, and they just won a world championship. And if anything, they improved themselves in the offseason with the Garrett Cole trade. They're saying all the right things about there's not going to be a hangover, but you and I both know, having watched it, there's probably going to be a hangover. How good are they, and what are they – you know, how difficult is it going to be, in your opinion, for that young team to not sort of fall into some of the same traps that the Cubs fell into in the first half of last season?
Well, I think they've got two big things going for them that the Cubs didn't. One, with apologies to the Astros, I don't think them winning this World Series, which I know was historic for them, I just don't think it came with quite the same national attention that the Cubs winning did. So I think there was probably a little bit less pulling on the players in the offseason as there was for a lot of the Cubs core players, which I think then carries over into spring training. I think they're probably able to focus a little bit more. And then I think the reality too is they on paper right now are a far better team than the Cubs were on paper last year. It's just a fact.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I think they have those things going for them. Like the Cubs, I think they have a division that's very winnable. I don't know that – I mean, I do like some of the teams in the AL West, but I think probably they're going to handle it pretty easily. They may have the same kind of first half that the Cubs did, but I think they're a playoff team. And then it's just a matter – excuse me – it's just a matter of what kind of health they have heading into the postseason. And that, of course, is something you can't predict. And so – If they get there and they struggle, maybe they're hurt, banged up a little bit. Well, we know what the story will be. It'll be that, well, they were hungover, and then that's how it goes. If they don't, it'll be, well, they were just historically good, and you know, teams can't do this, and they're the next coming of the turn of the century Yankees. And so, it'll be interesting to see. I think really the only things you could say is that they're better on paper than the Cubs were last year, and I think they probably had a little bit more prep time than the Cubs did last year.
Then the other team that I wanted to ask you about is the team that the Cubs have seen in the NLCS the last 2 years. They beat the Dodgers in 16, obviously lost last year in five games in that series. The Dodgers got to a Game 7 of a World Series. They couldn't quite get over the hump. They have this historic pitcher in Clayton Kershaw, another really talented core, all of that stuff. Yet windows close on teams, and you know there's certainly no guarantee that Kershaw is going to be as great into his 30s as he was in his late 20s. When you look at the Dodgers, do you start to think yeah, huge market and all the money and all that stuff, but God, if you're going to win a title, you better hurry up, or do you think that they still have plenty of time?
Well, I think it's yes and no, in part for the reason you just said. As Kershaw heads into his 30s, you just don't know. I mean, he's had back issues. He has had injury issues. You look at Justin Turner, how critical he's been to them the last 3 years. Well, he just broke his wrist. He's 33. You don't know how a guy's going to come back from that. They have key pieces that you can see maybe taking steps back in the next 1, 2, 3 years. But they also have Cody Bellinger. They have Corey Seager. They have Kenley Jansen locked up for a while. I mean, they have pieces that could perhaps you shift more of the load onto, and they continue this window. I think the other thing that the Dodgers have going for them that a lot of teams that are this good at the big league level don't have is an extraordinary farm system. I mean, they are still loaded in the upper levels. And so, you know, they did a great job when Andrew Friedman came over of exerting their financial might to build up that farm system in ways that were available to them at the time and now are less available. And so I think on the strength of that, they're probably going to be able to extend this window maybe more than you would think just by looking at that big league roster.
All right, last thing, because I'm curious here. If I tell you, if the base, I always let the football gods come down and visit, or the baseball gods come down and visit. If the baseball gods come down and visit you and they say, hey, Brett, good news, the Cubs got back to the World Series, and the Cubs had an MVP, and the Cubs won a Cy Young, who would you guess would be the Cy Young winner, and who would be the MVP off of that team?
For the whole season?
Yeah, for the Cubs. Who's the? If I tell you the Cubs got to the World Series and a Cub won the Cy Young and a Cub won the MVP, who would you guess the MVP and Cy Young were?
I got to say, I mean, I'm going to be lame and boring. If they got an MVP, I'm going to say Chris Bryant, just because his talent set and his name recognition and all of these things are such that it seems most likely that it would be him. Maybe a little more fun answer would be Wilson Contreras. You know, you could see
he's my answer.
Put it all together.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can see it for sure. Cy Young. I mean, again, it's just funny because like, boy, you could really pick anybody, but, why don't I go, I'm going to go with Kyle Hendricks this time, because I think now having been a Cy Young finalist, now maybe going to take a little bit better care of his, middle finger this year, maybe not deal with the tendonitis he had last year. If he puts up the numbers that he did in the second half, or he did in 2016, now he's got some of that name recognition going for him that he didn't have in 2016. That, you know, I think maybe could propel him forward a little bit more. So I also just think he too has looked very good in spring training. And you know, you can't go wrong picking anyone on that staff practically. So I'll go with Hendricks.
All right, last thing, I promise this is it. You've branched into the NFL a little bit with some of your stuff at the 10-yard line. It's a really good site. It certainly looks like the Bears are more attractive to some free agents. People are more interested in they see maybe a window beginning to open up with Mitch Trubisky. Is that sort of a fair observation on my part?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't claim to be any kind of expert on the Bears, on the level of Luis, who handles most of our Bears stuff. But certainly as a Cubs fan, having been through what we've been through, it there's some kind of feel to it. You know, I mean, Chicago is going to be a draw for free agents as it is. But, you know, in the NFL, even more than in baseball, because a player's window to compete is so much shorter, you really see guys unwilling to, even for good money, unwilling to go to places where they don't think they can win right away. So it's been very heartening to see. I mean, and we saw that last year where the Bears were pursuing certain free agents they targeted, they made good offers, and nobody wanted to come. Well, now that they see things might be turning, Trubisky looks legit, the Bears kind of were landing. They're landing the guys that they're targeting. And so, you know, it makes you think about that post 2014 time for the Cubs. You know, they land Joe Maddon, they land John Lester, sort of they sell free agents on the idea, hey, we're going to pay you, but you're also going to win here. And so, yeah, I kind of see some parallels.
Well, my man, I really appreciate the time. It's always fun. It's something I look forward to, and I appreciate you being so generous with your time this evening. So get back to your family. I know you're excited about the Cub season. I am too, and as it gets going, I'd love to catch up with you again.
Hey, that sounds good. Thanks, as always, Neil. It's always a good chat.
Okay, Brett, thanks. Again, our thanks to Brett Taylor for his time today on the show. Also, again, our thanks to Ben Ingram. Hope you enjoyed that baseball fix. The season begins a week from Thursday. Cubs and Marlins play the first game 11:40 Central Time that morning. I know the Braves are in action, as we told you, that afternoon. So everybody pretty much playing on that Thursday is the opening weekend of the Major League Baseball season is finally here for those of us who live and die game by game and just enjoy Major League Baseball. It's always a really fun time of the year when it rolls around. So we'll be back with another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden sometime next week. We'll preview the Final Four, talk some NBA down the stretch, and we'll continue to talk about the NFL draft as that gets closer and all of those things here on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Again, thanks to Ben. Thanks to Brett. Thanks to all of you for listening. Talk to you next week. Take care.